Bread.
It is the appointed hour, so we will open the Committee on Health Care for the House for February 25th, 2011, and welcome. We're going to make a slight change in the schedule today in deference to some colleagues that are on a frantic schedule and hear from some legislators. I will open hearings for them. Close the hearings again. We will come back to the hearings in their due place. But we've got some people that need to be someplace else other than here. So we'll start off with that. First, I will open a public hearing for House Bill 2233 for the purpose of hearing from our colleague from the lower chamber, Senator Brian Boquist. I'm going to pay for that. I know I am. And I believe Representative Olson.
I believe
Representative Olson's L.A. Please, whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chairman, representing the lower house, I will let the upper house go first.
Okay. Very kind of you.
For the record, my name is Thomas Cuomo, and I'm the legislative assistant for Representative Olson. Unfortunately, due to his obligations in Rules Committee, he's unable to make it, but there's a few thoughts he wanted me to convey to you. Chair Thompson, members of the committee, I clearly understand the nature of the intent of this bill. I believe there are areas that must be considered before proceeding forward with House Bill 2233. As a Schedule 3 controlled substance, my concern is how many prisons would need to be constructed to accommodate the increased volume of inmates this bill would cause. Currently, the Department of Corrections spends $84 a day to house one inmate. Putting this into perspective, you are talking about over $30,000 per year per inmate. Second, black market demand could cause an increase in gang activity and violent behavior. A simple Googling reveals a significant increase in the black market just to avoid the tax structure placed on tobacco goods. By banning nicotine, it may set up a classic example of the provision of an illegal good to a demanding public, resulting in a larger demand. Finally, the cost issue needs to be addressed. During the 2009 through 2011 biennium, the state of Oregon brought in over $300 million in legislatively approved dollars as a result of the tobacco tax. According to the Department of Revenue, during the fiscal year 2009-10, nearly $162 million were allocated to the Oregon Health Plan, and $57 million were directed to the general fund, just as a result of the Oregon tax, cigarette tax. These are all three issues that need to be heavily considered before attempting to control tobacco and nicotine products as a criminal offense. Representative Olson.
Yeah. Senator Boquist, do I understand correctly you wanted to testify on the first two bills?
Mr. Chair, I'm on 2233, and the second one is 2726, and I have about 10 minutes, so if you want to wait and do them both, or however you want to do it, I'm fine.
And we open a hearing on both of them. For the purpose of Senator Boquist's time, we will also open a hearing on House Bill 2726. The person taking his testimony, and you may have both bills at one time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I am Senator Brian Boquist, Senate District 12, which comprises Senate District 23 and Senate District 24. And no, Mr. Chairman, I will probably pay the price in the end, so not you. So, however, in addition to that, I'm the chairman of the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee in the Senate, which is not the capacity I'm here in, but I'm also the Senate's representative on the Homeland Security Council, which is the perspective that I'm actually bringing today. I'm going to take a different twist in regards to the bill, just to put into the record to give a little bit of background on the maybe unintended consequences that will need to be addressed if you decide to move forward with this bill, and some things to think of. During the 2005 session in the Revenue Committee, we addressed the issue, and some of you members were here, of uncollected tax revenues in regards to the revenue tax. We created and continue to fund a, for better or better, I call it a revenuers group to track down smuggling of cigarettes. It was so successful that we in the legislature decided to cut it from $18 million to $13 million, and it was so successful after that we decided that it wasn't worth putting any more money in. There's an old adage in the military, is you've got to get somebody who knows how to get the job done, and unfortunately when you're trying to stop a smuggler, you've got to hire a smuggler. So that's kind of how it boils down to. since that time, to fast forward now, and I would point out back in those days, we didn't think it was difficult to stop smuggling the cigarettes because there was an operation called Project North Star, which is a joint American-Canadian operation that runs along the northern border. It's been in effect for quite some time. It's been enhanced since 9/11, and that particular border operation focuses on illegal drugs and contraband coming across there. Now, I suppose the good news on the state side, if the bill passed, this would now become a contraband in the state of Oregon, but on the federal side. The reason we were disappointed in that revenue task force that kind of brings it home here is that at that time, the federal government and other people took imagery along the border. There are 13 border crossings, which I'll show you in a minute. 8 of those are open 8 to 5. And, of course, that means if you're not traveling 8 to 5, you just cross over and put your name in the honor bucket as you go by. That meant on average, on a good night, you would see 8 containers of cigarettes cross the border, untaxed, unregulated, and unchallenged. Now, some of us thought that it would be pretty easy since you got a picture and a license plate and a truck and a 20-foot container that we'd be able to interdict those, but the federal government's not been interested in the west of the Mississippi and is only interested now in the northeast. Since 9/11, what's happened, you have an article in front of you that's coming around that I'm not going to go into detail with you, but it's entitled Financing Terrorism, Terrorism and Tobacco, and How Cigarette Smuggling Figures into the World Market. In the United States, the single easiest item to smuggle is the cigarette. The laxest laws we have are the cigarette in terms of regulatory tracking it down at the federal level. So what has happened is because the price of opium and other illegal drugs have dropped due to American military activity in those areas, which have provided an unintended consequence, as my superiors in the military would say, that drug smuggling has gone up 3,000%. Now, as any other market and demand happens, when smuggling goes up and quantity goes up, competition happens and price goes down. And so a lot of those illicit drugs now sell less than cigarettes. It's bad news for us. It's bad news for Europe. But the bottom line has come home in the United States is that most of the terrorist organizations like Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, AQM, and the whole list that you see on the 6 o'clock news and was on the 6 o'clock news tonight in another cigarette interdiction that happened today of another terrorist group in the United States is they're smuggling cigarettes. Most of it counterfeit that's being smuggled in, most of it coming over the Canadian border. The second article I'd bring out to you talks about the illicit traffic again from the United Nations. If you kind of look at it, it's got a nice little picture on the front of it here. It says Lucky Strife. And these are references to two UN reports and a World Health Organization report that talks about smuggling. But the interesting thing on the back for your color edification here, you'll be able to look at it. These are the brands that are smuggled commonly into the United States. A single container is about $2 million worth. It's a 120-foot container that comes across the border. Remember I said when we were tracking it 10 years ago, eight came across the Canadian border in Washington at a time. So that's $16 million in illegal cigarettes coming across the border. And we couldn't track it down then. These pictures actually come from Vancouver. That's actually, they're interdicted in Vancouver, and so they continue to cross our border. The last piece of information that I've put out to you is a map that you can kind of look there, and it talks about the border crossings up in the north. And the problem with the border crossings in the north, if you look at the map, and the hours for, if you want to, in case you want to go to Canada, you can see on the back there of this, tells you which border stations are open when. And if you look at the map, you'll notice that it has two or three good roads on there that you can see, and there's about 150 additional roads that are not on the map that anybody can cross and come south on. The reason I kind of raised this issue from the national security point of view and what an impact of a bill like this may have that you may want to consider is presently the underground smuggling rate or the underground counterfeit rate in the state of Oregon is about 20% of the entire market. These are illegal counterfeit cigarettes. In 2006, the rate was about 13%, and it's gone up about 6% since that time. So the challenge we face, no matter what we do, if you go forward with a bill like this, which I'm not even debating the public policy of it, is that we'll have to figure out what's the next step in regulating and combating the traffic of illegal cigarettes into the state of Oregon. I'd be happy to entertain a few questions. I am not a smuggler, but with 34 years of counterterrorism experience, I have smuggled on behalf of the United States government legally into foreign countries. So, again, when you're going to hire someone to stop smuggling, you need to hire the smuggler. Thank you, Mr. Chair, on behalf of that one. Would you like me to go into to the other bill very briefly?
If you would, please.
Could I ask a question?
Sure. Question? Yes.
Please. I'm intrigued that my bill has caused this reaction. I find it wonderful. But if the problem was how to deal with interdiction, wouldn't it be better if the whole thing was illegal?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Grant, you would think so, but then the same logic applies to legalization of marijuana and other drugs. What we've frankly found out, and I'm open to the suggestion, by the way, is that many of the drugs that we've made illegal, we've made them more valuable and more rampant. I mean,
so then the response would be to make those other drugs legal.
There are other drugs that we should, in fact, in my mind, look at legalizing, because you drive the price up, and that's what is going to happen here. If you take any commodity, like we're talking about, and you become the only place, then you're the largest dollar benefiter, and you attract everybody. If you remember the meth lab problems we had, too, this legislature and the members were here. We took hard action on meth labs, and it wasn't going after labs. It was going after some of the resources, and we've kind of driven them out of the state. Unfortunate problem is now it comes up the road on I-5 from Mexico, so we still have the same problem, but not the labs.
Thank you. I'll comment on this later.
Okay. Anybody else on 2233? Okay, I'm going to close the hearing on 2233 temporarily, and we will remain open on House Bill 2726 for Senator Boquist's testimony, and then we will bring up Representative Tomei on that bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the House Committee. Switching gears and switching hats, because I made mention before that I was talking about Homeland Security, I'm switching over to another issue, which is that issue of the bill here. And I just want to bring to light to you one small microcosm of what happens in terms of dealing with hookahs and cultural locations in a state we say that's diversified. What you have in front of you is a sheet of paper that has a description on one side and some pictures on the other. And most of you don't know what a jirga is, and so I guess I'll explain it unless a committee member knows. What a jirga is you guys. A jirga in the Arabic countries in which we are unfortunately in a conflict in right now, the two of which, is a meeting of individuals like you that pass a law. It's a community organization. Amazing enough, they don't sit in dioceses like this. They sit in circles with lots of strong, strong tea and a hookah sitting in the middle, and they discuss it till the wee hours of the night, kind of like those old movies we used to say in the legislature with men smoking cigars and decisions made in smoky rooms. And it's a cultural thing. The next one that's down is a shura. And a shura is basically where everybody gets together kind of like in the public hearing, and no action's taken, but everybody talks about it, and all the communities get together. In the last year alone, I've participated on the military side in the training of somewhere around 180 shuras and key leader engagements. Integral to that in working with the Arabic culture is, strangely enough, the hookah. Now, I'm not an expert on either of the topics in terms of, you know, what's the health benefits, what's the downside, so on and so forth. I learned a long time ago after 34 years in the military is that if it works in their culture and they stop shooting at it, then we're going to adopt it. And so that's the model we work with. Strangely enough, we just had a bill in our chamber that some of you over here I know would have voted for, you know, called horse tripping. And that had another cultural aspect to it on the other side. And, of course, because of the cultural aspect, it died or would have died on this side of the chamber and it disappeared around. I would simply ask that when you're considering the bill in regards to the hookah, that you look at the cultural perspective. You look at the fact that we invited most of these folks here to the major cities 30 years ago. This does have a Homeland Security aspect of it, which I'd be happy to talk offline with any one of you about, but this is probably not the forum for do it. So having said that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate being indulged by the committee. I'll let you go back to your business, and I'm sure I will see many of your bills on my side, the lower chamber, Mr. Chair.
we will try to make that happen. And thank you for coming over. Representative Tomei will take your testimony if you're ready.
I am ready. Thank you. Thank you.
You guys are too crowded over here.
Back. Tell me about it. Do you
want to clear out the Mr. Kotaris? And committee, I am Carolyn Tomei, State Representative from House District 41, which is Milwaukee and parts of Southeast Portland. I'm here today in support of House Bill 2726. The bill in front of you today will clean up problems created unintentionally by the smoke shop exemption to the Clean Indoor Air Act, which we passed in 2007. The smoke shop exemption had one purpose, to allow customers to sample tobacco before buying it and taking it off premises to smoke. Instead, it has allowed smoking dens and lounges to proliferate and has created unhealthy and unwholesome environments where young people are gathering. And I think you can see some of these pictures that have very little to do with the kind of culture that we just heard from the previous speaker. In 2007, during debate on the Clean Indoor Air Act, legislative intent was clear. Senator Prezansky proposed the smoke shop exemption specifically for business owners to help their customers to decide which product to buy. As Senator Walker put it, we don't want these smoke shops to become speakeasies, and we don't want to expose anyone else to secondhand smoke. Senator Burdick said, when the bill reached the Senate floor, no one will have their health jeopardized because of their presence in a public place. And I am angry that this exemption has been taken advantage of and that young people are being lured in and exposed to smoking and secondhand smoke despite our best efforts in 2007. You may think that my use of the word lured is extreme, but I don't think it is. Although this loophole is used for cigar and cigarette lounges where people smoke indoors, the most disturbing result of this unintended loophole is the rise of hookah lounges and hookah smoking by young, very young people. Here are some examples of the flavors of tobacco smoked in a hookah, and I'm sure that people in the countries to which our senator was speaking did not have these flavors. Exotic sour apple, exotic blueberry, exotic tangerine dream, exotic fuzzy lemonade, sweet melon, grape, berry, peach. Do these sound like flavors that your father might have smoked in his pipe? Not my father. Do these sound like flavors that adults would want to have with their tobacco? Of course not. Hookah tobacco comes with no warning labels, and these lounges are sending a message to teens that this type of smoking isn't harmful, and that is wrong. Smoking flavored tobacco leads as surely to addiction and poor health as smoking cigarettes. Remember, tobacco is the leading cause of preventable death and disease. Here in the House Health Committee and in the House Human Services Committee, we are struggling to find ways to control health costs. It is beyond me why our laws would continue to allow the proliferation of these smoking dens. As you can see, hookah lounges advertise to teenagers with their exotic flavors, their party atmosphere, their online presence. These are parties you wouldn't want your children or your grandchildren attending. Bikini nights, dress-up nights. One of them that my staff found was called CEOs and Hoes, and that's H-O-apostrophe-S, not H-O-S-E. So you can draw your own conclusions from that. They have live music, all of which is appealing to young people. But you don't just have to believe me. We have a clip here, and I've never done anything like this.
So we're going to try it and see how it works. Who has smoke and mirrors?
My parents both were smokers when I was younger, and I absolutely hated it.
We're staff.
But this doesn't have a split. It doesn't have like a smell, and I don't feel like it's as bad. I don't feel like it's like half as bad as smoking a cigarette, and it just tastes good, and it's like relaxing. Like, you'll come in here, and you'll see me just sprawled out laying in the corner because it's just so relaxing just watching Hannah Montana on a Tuesday.
Hookah tobacco smoking is on the rise here in Oregon among teens and young adults.
That is according to an advanced state report that's been obtained by the Fox 12 investigators. The rise in hookah use is especially startling among teenage girls, where hookah use has doubled in just 1 year. The state says this is clearly happening in cities and counties where there are a growing number of hookah lounges. It definitely has its seductive qualities, and many hookah lounges clearly attract the young, cool, and hip. But health officials say this is dangerous, and that in a typical session, hookah smokers may inhale just as much smoke as a cigarette smoker inhales from 100 cigarettes.
I never really thought it was very harmful, I guess. There's not nicotine in it. It's not addictive. And it's not, I don't feel like it's bad for you.
It's a lot less harmful than a cigarette.
For the record, there is nicotine in hookah tobacco, and nicotine is addictive.
People need to be aware that this is not a safe pastime. This is tobacco use.
State epidemiologist Katrina Hedberg fears hookah use could be creating a new culture of young people addicted to tobacco.
The point is that this is tobacco that's being used in this fashion and is being used primarily among teens and young adults.
I think it's common to just like sit down and just smoke hookah, peace and Jesus. Sometimes it makes you like a little, like it gives you a little buzz, but other than that, there's nothing really at all.
Hookah tobacco, or shisha, as it's sometimes called, comes in many flavors.
I like pumpkin pie and apple cinnamon.
And that may be another reason folks don't think that hookah smoking is all that harmful. The tobacco taste is masked. You don't light up a hookah like you light up a cigarette. Lit coals heat up the tobacco on top of the hookah, while the smoke is filtered through cool water at the base.
Probably when I was 16.
Aubrey Tant, underage when she started smoking hookah, says that she just did it with friends, not at a lounge like this. Owners of hookah lounges say they're careful not to let anyone in under the age of 18. Some won't even allow anyone under 21.
Everyone at the table has to be 21 and over to smoke the hookah.
However, this young woman went undercover for the state, visiting 10 hookah lounges.
Lots of young people appeared to be 18 to 20. Some appeared to be younger.
She says she was carded just 60% of the time. While hookah smoking may be a growing fad among Oregon's young, for others, it's cultural.
Hookah smoking is very traditional.
But as with the young, Rami Juni's hookah lounge is also as much about smoking as it is about socializing.
Sit around with friends, we smoke hookah, you know, play cards.
According to health officials, hookah pipes produce more smoke than cigarettes, more secondhand smoke. That's more cancer-causing chemicals and toxic gases. The state says it found air levels in hookah lounges ranging from unhealthy to hazardous. That means that hookah lounges may be violating the state's indoor clean air law. When that law was passed in Oregon, there were few hookah lounges around. 3 years later...
It's very popular for a reason. It's starting to grow now in Oregon.
So far, hookah lounges operate in Oregon under a smoke shop exemption in the law, which health officials say is really only meant for retail shops.
I just like the flavor, mostly, and blowing little tiny O's. Got sweet skills.
Well, state health officials say that they want the legislature now to close the loophole in Oregon's smoke-free workplace law that currently allows hookah lounges to operate.
My parents both were smokers when I was younger, and I absolutely hated it. But this doesn't have a it doesn't have like a smell, and I don't feel like it's as bad. I don't feel like it's like half as bad as smoking a cigarette, and it just tastes good, and it's like relaxing. Like, you'll come in here and you'll see me just sprawled out laying in the corner because it's just so relaxed.
Okay, it was starting to replay, I guess. Okay, so these lounges are not allowing smoking simply for the purpose of sampling tobacco, which was the loophole in the legislation that was passed in 2007. These folks are in the business of providing starter tobacco to kids who become tomorrow's addicted customers. House Bill 2726 is an important step toward solving these problems. The bill limits the number of patrons who may be seated in a smoke shop, which would help to eliminate smoking lounges and the lounge atmosphere in these establishments. The bill also requires that smoking be limited to sampling of tobacco for retail purchase, decision-making, and that no food or beverages be offered or sold on premises. And that the Oregon Health Authority set up a registration system that allows for unannounced inspections. So I'm here today to ask for your support of House Bill 2726. I think one thing that we can all agree on is that tobacco should not be in the hands of our kids. Hookah smoking puts customers at risk for the same conditions as cigarette smoking, including oral cancer, lung cancer, stomach cancer, cancer of the esophagus, reduced lung function, and decreased fertility. Adults should not be allowed to market tobacco to kids or encourage kids to smoke. That is what is happening today, and that is why I urge you to pass House Bill 2726. And thank you so much for the opportunity to testify here today.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. With that, we are going to close the public hearing on 2726. We'll be coming back to that once we get past the first bill that we skipped over. I'm keeping track. Honest, I'm keeping track.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, so, with that, we're going to go back to a hearing on House Bill 2233, and I'm going to ask Co-Chair Greenlicht to...
Sorry.
I will not ask Co-Chair Greenlicht to preside because he's leaving. Other than that, okay. So we're going back. We'll reopen the hearing on 2233, and Co-Chair Greenlicht will be the first person to testify. See, sitting here, you learn all kinds of things you didn't know a minute ago, but that's fine. Please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlicht, House District 33, which is Northwest Portland, West to North Plains, and I appreciate you hearing House Bill 2233, and I've been intrigued with hearing the testimony beforehand about how this is both a national security risk and a possibility of breaking the bank on the prison budget, which I am very pleased to talk about. Frankly, I have this bill before us because of a discussion we had in the last session in the Health Committee when the co-chair challenged me by saying, well, why don't we just make cigarettes illegal if it's...
Can I add in that the co-chair does not make flippant remarks anymore because they tend to come back in another session? Please proceed.
I didn't see your name as co-sponsor here,
no,
Mr. Chairman.
This,
I spent about a year chairing a National Academy of Science committee on bringing substance abuse treatment research into substance abuse to treatment in the United States, and had those long flights back from Washington, D.C. after spending 2 days talking about substance abuse. And I kept thinking about how we treat in our society alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana in three different ways. Alcohol, we as a state sell and make profit from it. Tobacco, we sell and collect taxes on it, and we, in some places, actually subsidize the growth of tobacco. And marijuana, we make illegal, and we'll be talking more about that perhaps before we're done, and fill up at least federal prisons with people who sell marijuana on a wholesale level, sort of act like the state acts on the alcohol products. And the idiocy of the juxtaposition of those three
really got me thinking about what could we do. We tried making alcohol illegal. That caused a big problem, although most of us aren't old enough to remember that, including me, and I'm probably the oldest one here. But the fact is, when you look at those three drugs, the one that's the most addictive is tobacco. And tobacco, in fact, is probably, from the research I've looked at, even more addictive than heroin or cocaine. Tobacco is a product that there are very few people who haven't ever smoked a cigarette, but if they haven't ever smoked a cigarette, they didn't get addicted to it. Most of us who got addicted to tobacco, and I was one of those, I spent several years of my life smoking three packs a day and had a lot of trouble getting out of it, pretty much became addicted with the first cigarette we ever had. And the evidence on that is really quite clear. So here we have a product that's extraordinarily addictive, that's the major cause of preventable disease and death, being involved in heart disease, stroke, cancer, hypertension, and many other diseases that are a major cause of death. And we think it's okay to sell it. We think it's okay to tax it and make money. And we think it's okay for our citizens to continue smoking, even though we do some very modest things to try and convince people how bad it is. We had a comment earlier on how effective we were in dealing with pseudoephedrine, not as a product in its own right, but as a raw material for methamphetamine production. And we solved that problem by taking a product that was perfectly legal and over-the-counter and simply put it behind the prescription counter. Very effectively solved the problem. It didn't stop the supply of meth, because we never expected it to stop the supply of meth, but what it essentially stopped was meth labs, which were extraordinarily dangerous, increasing abandoned children, increasing fire hazards, destroying neighborhoods, and we were effectively able to stop it. So it struck me that rather than trying to outlaw cigarettes, we should treat cigarettes more like we treat other things, and that's put it behind the prescription counter. It's a drug that you can imagine physicians prescribing under certain circumstances, dealing with the addicted person, and one that would solve a problem, would allow us to continue to collect taxes on this product as we do on alcohol, and not necessarily fill up the prisons, although I really would like some of that testimony. So if we can find out it's a reason not to make something illegal because it's filling up the prisons, that we might make it legal, and perhaps legalizing other drugs might be the answer. So it's here to highlight how dangerous tobacco is. It's not here because I expect to get 31, 16, and 1, but it is something that I really want us all to take very seriously. What do we do about the most addictive drug that's certainly legal, by far the most addictive drug, and also in many ways the most dangerous drug? So I'm here to offer this to the Health Committee, to not even necessarily to ask you, Mr. Chair, to have a work session on this, but it's one that seems to me to be an important way to raise how dangerous tobacco in our society is. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Greenlick. Questions? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Greenlick, being on this side this time, you realize that this is $162 million out of the Oregon Health Plan, and I think you remember the question you asked me on the 1% provider tax.
Yep.
How would you look at replacing this money if we were to pass this bill that we would lose out of the Oregon Health Plan?
I would say, just as the governor has been saying to us, we need to look at the budget in a 10-year period. I think we could, I haven't done the analysis, but my guess is we could save that much money in the next decade by far by stopping people smoking right now.
The effect of tobacco on pulmonary disease happens very, very quickly. We reduce that effect. We reduce the effect on certain cancers very, very quickly. And I'd be happy to get the analysis if we're going to seriously look at this. But I think we could easily make $140 million out of the cost of the Oregon Health Plan by reducing tobacco-related diseases if we made this work effectively. That's an important question.
Well, that's assuming they're all on the health plan. Actually, if I may follow up with that.
Please.
I think the smoking incidence of health plan members is higher than it is with the population, and we're still having something like 18 to 20% of the adults in our population smoking.
It kind of prompted a follow-up, and I didn't think about going here, but it'd be kind of nice if we did that analysis, because we know that smoking causes heart disease, cancer, things like that, and earlier death versus I have a grandmother who's 97 on Medicare, Medicaid, and she's been receiving lots of treatment in and out of the hospital and lots of doctor's appointments by not having anything wrong with her. And I'd be kind of curious to see what the difference is. I bet we almost might find it might be cheaper with the lifespan of smokers and the poor decisions they're making. But I'd be kind of curious to see how that pencils out.
No, absolutely. In fact, there was an article in the American Public Health Association Journal several years ago that talked about the effect on Social Security in the United States if we can instantly stop tobacco smoking. And the effect is very clear. It would break the bank, because the life tables we use now for health insurance and for Social Security and for PERS all figures in the effect of smoking. And they mostly calculate what's happening with the dropping rate now, but it is very clear if we quit smoking now, we would expand the lifespan enough so those old life tables would be completely out. Absolutely.
Anyone else? Thank you, Co-Chair Greenleck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have two more people who want to testify on this bill. Would Wayne Brady and Steve Buckstein please move up?
Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Wayne Brady. I'm here representing the Taxpayers Association of Oregon. And my ideas are pretty simple. I think Senator Boquist went through a lot of the sort of smuggling issues and so on. But this bill would, at the same time, reduce state revenue and increase... It would reduce state revenue both for tobacco taxes, and I think income tax revenue, because the people who are selling cigarettes would see a smaller income there. At the same time, it would increase spending on law enforcement, and I suspect it would reduce tourism income. People coming into the state wouldn't like to come to Oregon if they're smokers. And at the same time, Oregon residents would be largely denied a product that's legal in the rest of the United States. So we're urging a no vote on House Bill 2233.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question,
please? Absolutely.
I'm shocked. I thought this would be a chance for me to finally get the endorsement of the Taxpayers League. I'm handing you a chance to reduce taxes by $200 million.
Tax income.
That's a good shot. Anyone else wish to comment or make a question? Thank you, Mr. Ray.
Okay.
Steve?
Thank you, Co-Chair Thompson, Co-Chair Greenlick, members of the committee. I'm Steve Buckstein, founder and senior policy analyst of Cascade Policy Institute, a public policy think tank based in Portland. The statement by Co-Chair Greenlick almost made me change my testimony here. In midstream, but not quite. I did take that into consideration. But basically, just personally, I have not smoked. I've never smoked. I, from a personal standpoint, don't care. I understand the health risks. I don't care if people smoke or not smoke. I don't care for them to smoke around me. But I believe basically in letting adults make their own decisions. And I think we've talked about the state revenue loss. I'm not going to go into that. But there are other unintended consequences of this measure, whether it's being considered seriously or not, that I'd just like to raise. I agree that I think making it a prescription drug would turn it into almost a totally black market. And you've had testimony here earlier about the huge profits in black market smuggling of cigarettes already. Those would go up astronomically with the attendant violence involved. When you put something outside the legal market, you get people involved who aren't so concerned about civilized norms and use violence. They can't call on the police to protect their market, so they take the law into their own hands, so to speak. So it's totally separate from the idea of how many people you might be throwing in prison. I think you're going to see a lot of rise in violence in the state from turning this product into a black market, because cigarettes would basically go underground just like other illegal drugs are underground. There's no legal market, so people take the law into their own hands. Internet sales would skyrocket. You've already seen some of that and dealt with that when you've raised cigarette taxes in this building in the past, or tried to, that internet sales, I think, would skyrocket. You'd see risk-taking entrepreneurs outside the law find a new profit center in these black markets. And I think you would see another, talking about children, about hooking children on tobacco or on any drug. I think there's a huge incentive to hook a child on an illegal drug compared to a legal one. You don't see pushers of cigarettes standing around school grounds trying to hook them on cigarettes, because there's very little profit in that compared to hooking them on illegal drugs. And so make it a black market product, take it out of the legal market, and I think you'd actually see more addiction to cigarettes by young people than you're seeing now. Education, I think, has done a great job in reducing the percentage of people in our society who smoke down to, 18 to 20% now, something like that. It's been done legally. It's been done through education. This, I think, would be the prescription model, would be a step in the opposite direction. And finally, talking about who this would actually affect in terms of the actual smokers. Chair Greenlick mentioned a little bit of the demographics, but from my research, cigarette smokers are more likely to be uninsured than non-smoking adults. Cigarette smokers are likely to be poorer and in poorer physical condition than non-smoking adults. Cigarette smokers generally have lower incomes and less formal education than non-smokers. Cigarette smokers are more likely to be unemployed or unemployable than non-smokers, and cigarette smokers are more likely to be minorities than the majority of the population. So in summary, I think what this bill, the people that this bill would affect and in effect punish, are more likely to be less educated, lower income, minorities, and sicker Oregonians. And finally, on a philosophical basis, I think criminalizing a habit, even a bad habit, and I agree, it's a bad habit, is really a step towards the nanny state that I don't think you should be taking. I don't think we should be taking. It makes a slippery slope towards that nanny state even slipperier. So getting to the point where anything that isn't prohibited should be required, or vice versa, I think this is a step in that direction, and I hope you don't take it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Right.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's a little bit of a statement because I have to take off here that you brought to my attention. But I think one of the things we need to be careful when we're looking at this is the environments we're creating, because when we move smoking out of the bars and the restaurants where you had to be 18 and over to be in, or 21 and over, we have them standing on the streets now. So I'm driving around with my kids that used to not see the smoking that was going on. Now they see the streets with three or four people standing in front of establishments smoking, and it's kind of creating an environment where they see, oh, they smoke. And I think we might be going backwards with some of the legislation that we've done. So I think we need to look at this very, very closely And that's kind of my statement before I have to head out with my 14-year-old, and hopefully we don't drive by a place where people are standing outside on the street smoking.
Thank you. Representative Kennebar.
You know, I thought it was interesting you mentioned about physicians, what the perplexing situation they would be in when asked to provide a prescription for something that I would think most of them would think would be harmful. And that kind of violates their Hippocratic Oath. And just kind of, I was thinking that would be some interesting video material. The other thing that I was remembering, too, then, I don't go back quite as far as the other co-chair, but I remember when they used to hand out cigarettes outside the schools, high schools. And that was a very effective marketing tool.
Thank you. Anything else? Commissioner Greenlee.
Yes, please, just a final comment. Three things. I really want to thank Mr. Buxton. I always appreciate him testifying. We always have an interesting time. The point he makes about smuggling is really a very important point. When we banned smoking in the state penitentiary, cigarettes and matches immediately wiped out the smuggling channel and filled the smuggling channel, wiped out the cocaine and the pot and the other things that were in the smuggling channel and filled it with cigarettes and matches. Matches were selling in the smuggling channel in the state penitentiary for $1 a match because they were outlawed. That makes two points. One is it really does talk about the addictiveness of tobacco, which is an extraordinarily addictive product. And maybe we do the same thing, maybe rather than adding a new black market channel, we would, the coke dealers and the pot dealers might find it more profitable to deal with cigarettes. And there might be that positive unintended consequence rather than a negative unintended consequence. The other thing is, if you don't watch tobacco ads, you don't realize how effective these ads are at hooking young people. They're far more effective than the sinister guy with a rock of cocaine. They are extraordinarily good at hooking our children, and our children are getting addicted to tobacco still at an increasing amount. It's very scary. So, I mean, the white market is bad enough. And I guess the final statement would be, I really like my nanny. I'm not sure anybody's so opposed to nannies.
May I respond?
You may respond, yes. We're losing control anyway.
Thank you, Mrs. Chair. I'm done. Okay.
Co-Chair Thompson, Co-Chair Greenlee. The point about if you make, in effect, if you outlaw or make nicotine a prescription, you may push out other illegal drugs. I didn't realize it had happened in prison. That's very interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
If that happened in society in general, my comment then would be that it's the same comment that I make to other committees in this building about picking winners and losers in the economy. It's not your place to do it, with all due respect. There are, again, unintended consequences there, and I think you might actually increase tobacco use by what you're talking about. Apparently that happened in the prisons. You replaced one drug with another. All may have bad effects, but there are arguments to be made that some illegal drugs may have less negative impacts on health than tobacco, and you may be going just in the opposite direction of the health effects that you're looking for if you make this a prescription and create that black market with a huge market incentive to hook people on cigarettes that weren't there before.
If I may, Co-Chairman Thompson and Greenlee, I suspect that the smugglers would just add this as another profit center. They would not stop the other things. They don't have as much trouble with the size of the channel you would getting things into a prison. That's my opinion.
Any Any other questions? Thank you for your testimony. And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2233. And we will reopen the hearing on House Bill 2726. And I think I did not ask you to do a summary in that first time, so let's go back and do it.
Okay, Mr. Co-Chair. Health Care Committee at the request of Representative Tomei. As you may have deduced from the presentation, it modifies the definition of a smoke shop for the purposes of complying with the Oregon Indoor Clean Air Act, and it directs the Oregon Health Authority to establish a registration system for the smoke shops. This has declares an emergency effective on passage. Originally, the bill had a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, but that has been removed, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Our first panel, we will call Dr. Katrina Hedberg and Rebecca Paulak, and I probably mispronounced that.
And Steve.
And Steve Fiala. And if you would please identify yourselves for the record before you begin to speak. Ask you to be as brief as you possibly can. I have just been informed that we have a busload of people wanting to speak on this bill, and we're going to be out of time. So if you could, cut down to like 2 minutes, please.
Chairs Greenlick and Thompson and members of the committee, I'm Katrina Hedberg, and I'm the state epidemiologist with the Oregon Health Authority. And I'm here today to speak in support of House Bill 2726. 2726 will tighten the smoke shop exemption to the Indoor Clean Air Act. It requires that smoking within a smoke shop be limited to sampling of tobacco products for the purpose of making a purchase decision, and that the sale of tobacco products for the use of tobacco products and instruments off-premise use only. And it also allows the Oregon Health Authority to make unannounced inspections of retail smoke shops. There are a couple of other stipulations as well. No food or beverages can be offered or sold on the premises for consumption, and it also limits the number of patrons that would be sampling these products in a smoke shop at any given time. And these are in there to tighten some of the rules around smoke shops and to really eliminate the lounge atmosphere that I think you all saw earlier in the video clip. The legislation that was previously passed allowing for smoking in smoke shops has led to a proliferation of these hookah lounges, and they have really become a gathering places for teens and young adults. And I have a couple of people here who will talk a little bit more about some of the work they have done by going into some of these smoke shops to see, the hookah lounges to see what actually is happening in those. We did a study looking at compliance with the Indoor Clean Air Act, doing an assessment of certified cigar bars. This current law that we're talking about is not going to change what happens with cigar bars, so those will continue to be allowed in Oregon. The key findings of the assessment really show that a number of these hookah lounges they comprise the majority of the businesses that are operating under the smoke shop exemption, really providing the social atmosphere that you saw. I think it was alluded to earlier as well that the Tobacco Prevention and Education Program, over the period of time it's been in effect, we've seen a decline in smoking both among adults, and that was alluded to, but also among youth. It's down 54% among 8th graders and 46% among 11th graders. The one thing that we've seen that belies that is the number of 8th graders and 11th graders that report having tried hookah and using hookah tobacco. So I think, and again, it's been talked about already, but one of the things about these hookah lounges is that it does change the social atmosphere. One of the things that we talked about, you know, youth, people don't wake up at age 50 and start smoking. The majority of people who start smoking do so before the age of 18, before it is legal. And so creating environments where tobacco use is socially acceptable among young adults lends to this the social acceptability and can start youth on the track of smoking. I think another thing that hasn't really been mentioned already is that within these hookah lounges, there is a lot of secondhand smoke. So people are not only smoking themselves and inhaling the primary air, but in fact, the secondhand smoke, a number of these hookah lounges will have lots of smoke that is internal, that the staff who are working there are inhaling this, as well as the patrons who, again, as you saw, spend many hours in these hookah lounges. Tobacco use is still the number one preventable cause of death and disability in Oregon, and it costs our state nearly $2.5 billion every year in direct medical care costs as well as lost productivity. So, again, we encourage you to pass House Bill 2726 to help protect not only the smoke shop patrons themselves and employees from secondhand smoke, and to make it more difficult for Oregon youth to become addicted to nicotine and the use of flavored tobacco. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Parrish.
I actually have two, if that's okay.
You can have two.
Thank you. Prior to the first one of these being established, and understand I'm not a smoking advocate, but help me out here. Prior to the first one of these hookah bar lounges, bars, whatever you want to call them, opening, when they came to the Oregon Health Authority for certification, was there not a sense that that you could have said no? I mean, the loop. I mean, seriously, because if it said cigar bars, and I'm trying to be really serious here, essentially the health authority sanctioned all of these businesses, and now you're coming back around and saying, yeah, we made a mistake here, and so I've got some concern about that. The second piece of the question, so I'll just ask it all together, the cost of tobacco, and I've had some conversation with some folks around this, the $2.5 billion. Can you clarify what that actually breaks down to in cost? Because I am going to dispute those numbers, but I'd like to hear what you feel like the breakdown of those numbers really means.
Okay. Co-chairs Greenlick and Thompson and Representative Parrish. So your first question, when the Interclean Air Act was passed, there are very clear criteria that define what a cigar bar is, and they needed to be in existence prior to the law going in effect, so it was the grandfather clause, but also what a smoke shop was. And it had to do with the number of receipts that these smoke shops got from tobacco products, and there were a number of criteria. So it wasn't a question of whether or not we wanted to enforce it. We followed the law that is passed, and there were clear criteria about what these exceptions were. So the smoke shops that have been certified, or the hookah lounges that have been certified as smoke shops, is not, if you will, us deciding that, gee, we should have not allowed them in the first place. We were following very explicitly what the law at that time allowed. And again, part of the reason that we're here to talk today is that our understanding is that when the law was passed, these hookah lounges, they weren't in effect. And so the legislation allowed for smoke shops at that time to allow the sampling of tobacco products to be used off-site. Mm-hmm. So again, this law has these smoke shops falling in this under what's allowed by the law have asked for certification. Is that clear? So that was your first question. The second question had to do with the cost. The cost of tobacco use, both primary, the person smoking themselves as well as secondhand smoke, there's a large number of different medical illnesses that are associated with it. Starting at the top, most people know that it's the primary risk factor for lung cancer, but it also contributes to a number of other cancers, heart disease, stroke, asthma. There's a whole array, and there's been a lot of studies to show exactly what how much we can attribute. Where we get those costs from is then if you look at, for example, if someone has a stroke and you say, well, of X number of people who've had stroke in Oregon, we can attribute half of those to use of tobacco or some such number. I can get you the exact statistics, but a day in the hospital costs several thousand dollars. You spend a week or two in the hospital, and you're on the order of thousands. So it's adding up the number of smokers, the different conditions, the number of days not only of hospitalization but also of medical care. We talked about asthma can exacerbate visits for asthma. So it's not just directly what you might think of as the tobacco condition, but also all of these other medical conditions that are well known. Studies have been shown that they are exacerbated by the use of tobacco.
I guess my concern, and language is a really hugely important thing, and I've seen in articles, and as we're talking about this, and in materials that I'm being handed, tobacco use is still number one cause for parental death in Oregon and cost our state nearly $2.5 billion. And I've seen it as cost the state $2.5 billion. And I've asked for some clarification, and in emails I've gotten back that $1.some-odd billion of that dollars is the lost productivity piece and as being a cost. And my example, when I was asking for clarification with the folks who were giving me these numbers, was that the... if I had an employee and I could quantify their economic activity in terms of profit cost to my business, and that employee quit, but I could factor that for a course of 30 years until their retirement age, the IRS would not let me write that off on my taxes, and I couldn't consider that a true cost. So I just want to be cautious, as I see from our state is saying that this is a cost to our state, the state, what those costs really truly mean in terms of the cost to the state general fund or all funds budget, because while I agree that there's productivity lost if somebody dies from cancer, it's not a cost to the state or our state in the way that it's being marketed, and it kind of fundamentally bothers me. So.
So, co-chairs Greenlick and Thompson and Representative Parrish, the calculations that we use, these economic calculations, are not something that we have invented. They're standard analyses that are done, both what are called direct, that's the medical costs, again, doctor's visits, medication, hospitalization, and then what are called indirect costs, and that's what you're alluding to. I'd be happy to get you, again, the methodology for that. I think part of it isn't, as you mentioned, an employee that quits, and if they had stayed on, how much they would have done, but rather things like we know that smokers take more sick leave days. Smokers, it damages the mucous membrane. They're more likely to come down with respiratory illness, meningococcal disease, a number of things like that. And when they're not in your, they're not working in the business, then that is lost productivity because those are work days that even though you have the employee, they are not adding to the workforce, if you will, during that period of time. So it's sick leave as well. But again, the methodology that we use is not something that we have made up. It's standard methodology, but I'd be very happy to share that with you. And in addition, I agree with you, the language is important, and we could easily write the direct medical care cost of such and so, and in addition, lost productivity, if that would be helpful in the future.
It would, and just because when my neighbor comes up and says, well, you know, this is costing the state of Oregon out of their, because now the interpretation and perception is it's costing our general fund or it's costing taxpayer dollars in a real way as we're having budget discussions, my neighbors kind of come to me and freak out about it. So I just want to caution what that actually looks like on paper. Thank you.
Representative Dougherty.
Is there any movement to ungrandfather cigar bars?
Co-chairs Greenlick and Thompson and Representative Dougherty, no, there's not at this point. What we're talking about is very clearly dealing with the smoke shop exemption that has allowed the proliferation of these hookah bars. It's not to revisit the cigar bars.
But there's not smoking in cigar bars and all of the problems also? It concerns me that you want to stop one bad thing and keep another bad thing.
The cigar bar, again, these were all carefully outlined in the original legislation with both the cigar bars and the smoke shop for the sampling of products. And so this current bill is really to look at, again, what seems to be a proliferation of what happened with the smoke shop and the sampling, these hookah lounges and others, and it's not to revisit the cigar bars. So people will continue to be able to go to cigar bars and smoke cigars in the cigar bars that were there prior to the Indoor Clean Air Act being passed in the first place.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to have to do something drastic here and go to hard time. I'm going to ask our assistant to use a timer for 2 minutes because we have a long list of people and we are not going to get to them. So if the panel wouldn't mind, we'll hold questions until the other two witnesses have spoken, and if you try to minimize your questions as well. But I'm not trying to bury this, but the clock keeps moving whether we're ready or not.
Thank you. Chairs Greenlink and Thompson and members of the committee, my name is Rebecca Pavlock. I am a 23-year-old graduate student who currently interns for the Health Promotion and Chronic Disease Prevention section of the Oregon Health Authority. I am here today to share my observations about smoking lounges in Oregon. House Bill 2726 will tighten the smoke shop exemption within the Oregon Indoor Clean Air Act, as most of these smoke shops are actually functioning as smoking lounges and not tobacco stores. In the summer of 2010, I participated in an observational study which was conducted by the Tobacco Prevention and Education Program, which reassessed certified cigar bars and smoke shops to determine if they were complying with the law. The majority of these businesses operating under the exemption are hookah lounges. They were not what anyone would call a tobacco retail store. Our initial assessments showed that the peak hours of operation were at weekends and at night, so we conducted assessments of 10 hookah lounges on the weekends after 9:30 p.m. Hookah lounges vary in size. Some were very large and accommodated over 100 smokers, while others were smaller. In every hookah lounge, there was 100% pressure to smoke. You could not be in a lounge without purchasing tobacco. Often the lounges had a drink minimum or a cover charge at the door, which made for a very bar or club-like atmosphere. You could not simply just come to a lounge to hang out with friends. You had to purchase tobacco in order to be in the lounge. Hookah tobacco comes in many sweet flavors that appeal to youth, such as cotton candy, vanilla latte, banana split, or strawberry margarita. Often lounges have house blends that they concoct mixing these flavors, and I was offered a flavor at one lounge that was called High School Rival. While reading a lounge menu, one of the young employees told me that hookah tobacco has no chemicals, therefore implying that it was a healthy product. I did not observe any hookah lounge offering tobacco-free products. In almost every lounge, I felt like the oldest person in the room. I'm only 23 years old and had my identification checked 50% of the time. The majority of these customers were young kids that are being enticed to smoke tobacco by businesses that are offering an unhealthy social environment. Young girls, in particular, are going to these lounges to be seen, not to do homework or study. Lounges then utilize websites such as Facebook to encourage youth to attend events such as Jell-O wrestling and lingerie parties. For example, during our first observation, we unknowingly attended a beach-themed event where young female employees or patrons were dressed in bikinis. These businesses then post pictures of these events online as a form of advertising, and the majority of these lounges feature pictures of young females. Passage of House Bill 2726 will protect youth from the dangers of being pressured to use tobacco. Therefore, for that reason, I support this bill. Thank you for letting me testify today.
May I just ask a quick question?
Okay.
Did you observe alcohol?
Co-chairs Greenlick and Thompson and Representative Kemener, we did not observe alcohol for sale, though at one lounge we did see empty beer cans in a room along with broken glass.
Okay. Chairs Greenlick and Thompson, members of the committee. I am Stephen Fiala. I'm a 26-year-old graduate student who interned for the Health Promotion and Chronic Disease Prevention section of the Oregon Health Authority. Like Rebecca, I am here today to share my observations about smoking lounges in Oregon. In the summer of 2010, I also participated in the observational study conducted by the Tobacco Prevention and Education Program. That assessed certified cigar bars and smoke shops to determine compliance with the law. Through this study, I observed 10 hookah lounges at peak hours of operation, namely weekends at 9:30 at night. As someone with asthma, I was most struck by the large volume of thick, sweet-smelling smoke that filled all of the lounges. smoke that I breathed in for hours while doing these observations. The smoke hung in the air and created dense, hazy lounge environments, and even though many of the lounges had doors propped open during the summer months, the smoke was still heavy. I was not surprised to find that the air quality in the lounges ranged from unhealthy to hazardous, as Katrina talked about. And I can't imagine what the air quality is like during the winter months when all the doors are closed. Over the course of the month-long study, I did feel the physical effects of the hookah smoke. The smoke irritated my lungs and caused shortness of breath. Normally, my asthma is under control, but I frequently had to use the rescue inhaler after observational assessments. I didn't smoke hookah during these assessments, so the negative health effects that I experienced were a result of inhaling secondhand smoke. I can't imagine how it is affecting youth who are directly inhaling tobacco smoke in these lounges every weekend. In addition to the sheer volume of smoke that filled the lounges, the smell of the flavored tobacco smoke was nauseating at times. But although nauseating, I can see the appeal of hookah smoking to youth. While the smoke is very thick and heavy in the lounges, it is also sweet-smelling and cool, so it seems less harsh than acrid cigarette smoke. In addition, the majority of the lounges had a distinct party-like atmosphere that you might find at a club or house party.
Have you finished up quickly?
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, youth are made to smoke hookah tobacco if they want to partake in this social activity. Even if an individual were allowed to be in a hookah lounge without smoking, they would still be inhaling a substantial amount of secondhand tobacco smoke. Young people shouldn't have to endure inhaling smoke to be part of a social group. The lounges are offering a venue for youth to socialize, but unfortunately they are centering the social activity on smoking flavored tobacco and passively inhaling large volumes of tobacco smoke. Passage of House Bill 2726 will help protect youth from the health dangers of tobacco smoke-filled lounges, and for this reason I support House Bill 2726, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify here today.
Representative Kenner.
I just want to make a comment that I'm pretty concerned that the health authority would send someone with asthma to do this kind of thing.
Well,
I don't think there's any response needed. I mean, I just, you know, let's keep behavior responsible, and you know, a little admonition to you to watch out for your own health, as my fat is another example of poor health. We all have some things we need to work on.
I can't respond to that.
Representative Cannon.
Okay.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just really quickly, when you talk about youth, you were talking about 18, 19, 20-year-olds?
Yeah. Chairs Greenlick and Thompson, Representative Cannon. Yes, I'm 26. I've been told I look substantially younger than that, and I still felt by far like the oldest person in the room, almost creepy in a way. Young people, 18, 19, 20. Some looked younger, but I know they're not supposed to be.
Okay, thank you. I would remind the audience it is standard practice here not to applaud, cheer, boo, throw chairs. Besides, in the case of Representative Kennebert, it encourages him when you applaud. So we don't need to encourage him. So please keep control. Thank you. Our next panel will be Paula Jacobs and two students whom I do not have the name of. Names out.
Paula Jacobs.
And again, I hate to be a bad guy, but 2 minutes, and we're going to have to enforce this because the clock is running faster and faster. So make your points you need to make very quickly. Important things up front, okay?
Okay.
Please identify yourself before you begin.
Hi, Chair Thompson Manubi. Committee members. I'm Paula Jacobs. I'm a health careers instructor for the Beaverton School District with our health careers program. I'm pleased I'm here to solely introduce these ladies to you, fabulous young women. They have started a project this year in coordination with Providence Cancer Center and Providence School Outreach in trying to educate youth about effects of smoking and smoking hazards, and part of that includes the hookah. They started that this fall in creating a peer-to-peer education program or a interactive presentation that they presented at four of our feeder schools and middle schools within our district with great success, reaching over 850 eighth graders, which is a prime age for starting any type of smoking behavior. And I think probably the biggest impact was of how the awe that came from all these presentations of the information on the hookah. With that, I want to turn it over to them.
Our scheduling allows to hear from two of you, so would you decide who? That's your choice, but we have to move along.
Okay, and first of all, I'll start. I am Kimmy Chan. I am a junior at Beaverton High School. I come from Beaverton, Oregon. And I'm just going to start. As a high school student, I feel that most people don't think that hookah is as dangerous as smoking cigarettes. The perception factor is very crucial because most of us tend to believe in what our peers tell us. And most of it is just that, oh, hookah isn't that dangerous. It's not the same as smoking cigarettes. And a lot of students believe that hookah is filtered, so that makes it healthier and cleaner to smoke it, which in reality is not really the case. The social piece also comes into play when the students see their friends with pictures on Facebook and other social networking sites that have ads or pictures of them with their friends at hookah lounges smoking hookah. Hookah is glamorized in the minds of high schoolers, and there is a definite lack of information regarding the risks of hookah and what it can cause to the body. We think that is just another way to party and have fun with our friends because hookah is supposedly not as dangerous to smoke as cigarettes. And for that reason, I believe that I support this bill because I do not believe that young students, such as me, a high schooler, should be able to go into hookah bars to smoke hookah.
I'm Sierra Langford. I go to Southridge High School, and I also live in Beaverton. And I got involved with this whole program because I really care about, you know, youth not partaking in risky behaviors, and this is my way of helping. But I just want to point that we keep mentioning the Facebook and MySpace and how youth are being invited through these social networking sites, and it's absolutely true, and I personally have experienced this, and just by searching online, I see pink parties, and while searching that, I even found one of my second period classmates in one of the pictures who's definitely underage. There is an appeal to go to these things, even personally, you know, there's good-looking people there sometimes, there's the fun factor, the party, the music, there's always the hot dancing, and I even saw one for our local hookah lounge that featured sexy costume parties with early morning dances, and appeals like that definitely target the youth, and to think that it doesn't would be kind of a shame. Also that the fact that this is kind of starting people who are legal to go to these to perhaps buy one themselves and influence younger people to start as well, even if they take one home and do this. And the peer pressure is so great, and I just don't think it's acceptable that these places continue to operate in the manner that they are, and the targeting and using flavors that we've heard, you know, seductive kiwi, and there's even one fuzzy navel, not that that's very, you know, enticing, but it's the fact that it can draw on anyone, and they really pinpoint on all that. And I really thank you guys for the privilege to come here and talk to you guys, because I'm very passionate about this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, I thank you. And
good
we
job.
Will
thank you.
Move.
Thank you.
Donna Dish Curtis will be next. Is there anybody with her?
Good afternoon. Co-chairs Greenlick and Thompson. I am Donna Dish Curtis. I'm with the Office of State Fire Marshal. And it is not my intent to dilute the issues at all. I was asked to be here to address the request that we have from the Office of State Fire Marshal. Since the inception or the passing of the Indoor Clean Air Act, the Office of State Fire Marshal has had to address air quality. And the mission of the State Fire Marshal is to protect citizens from fire and hazardous materials. It is outside the scope of the Office of State Fire Marshal. As a result, the Office of State Fire Marshal has worked closely with health to do a workaround. And the only thing we would request is that you remove the Office of State Fire Marshal, and I've given
to your committee administrator the fix that I have, and it will save everyone a lot of time. Many of these people that are here today have called me. I've had as many as 10 in a month call me. I was asked to make sure and let you know that. And my counterparts at Health have really been wonderful to work with. We've had to put together a number of agreements between ourselves so that we can make it so that Health actually certifies the air, not the Office of State Fire Marshal. So I just wanted to be brief to the point and let you know what the request really is.
Thank you. Appreciate Thank you. That.
Mr. Chairman, is there not fire where there is smoke?
Our next panel will be Al Hammond, and I'm going to really screw up these names. I know I am.
I can do that.
Ramey Joni, or Joni, Joni, and Laura Yazin. I do not speak Arabic.
Okay. Early English.
That's true. I don't do well in English either. But
I'd be happy to translate for you.
You may get to. Okay, again, two right. minutes each, please, and will you identify yourselves at the beginning?
Not a problem, co-chair, member of the committee. My name is Al Hammond. I own Jeannie Hookah Cafe in Tigard, Oregon, for about 3.5 years. I am here to oppose to 2726. First of all, I came from the Middle East. I came for a main reason. The main reason was freedom. This is the country that I came for. A freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of practice. I am practicing my culture. Very simple. I'm trying to eliminate, you know, the time since I'm given 2 minutes to mention that I've been married for 23 years. I do have 3 kids. And I've been telling them every time about the law. I say, follow the law, respect the law, and you'll make it. What I did is I did follow the law to open my own business. And this is what we get. 2726 will demolish this. Going back to what I do also. I am an IT consultant. I deal with computers as well. Computers tells me everything is either white or black. There is no gray area here. And we are looking at a gray area absolutely by offering a cigar bar to operate, going back to a hookah lounge, to cancel and close them. This is unfair. This is not fair. No justice right here. And let me mention also the, which is very important here, the domino effect of 2726. We are talking about a stressful economy, a very high unemployment rate. Going back exactly to my culture, this is will destroy it. And nonetheless, what I mention is a small business owner, according to the SBA, Small Business Administration, it is clear for the record, 52% accounts for small business owners hiring American force. That's 52%.
Yeah. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Please identify yourself.
Co-Chair Thompson, Co-Chair Greenlink, members of the committee. My name is Rami Juni. I'm the owner of Beirut Hookah Lounge in Tigard, and I'm here to oppose Bill 2726. I want to start by myself a little bit. I was raised in Lebanon, Beirut, Lebanon. That's where the name of my place comes from. And we're not talking about just business at risk here. This is a whole culture that's being attacked in a way. Hookah is not just a smoking device for us. It's the epitome of the culture, of our culture. Hookah places are in the Middle East, like Starbucks. They're everywhere. Anywhere you go, I'd say 95% of the places that you go, restaurants, cafe, clubs, you can order a hookah. It's not looked at as a smoking device. It's for socializing, just like the Mr. Brian earlier said, Representative Brian, kings and high people in the society, when they do their meetings, they have a hookah in the middle sharing it. So from that, I want to say that 4 years ago, I was in the computer industry. We know how that went. And I decided to open a hookah lounge to introduce my culture to the people in the United States, my new home. And what I offer in my place is the social atmosphere. My place is for socializing, playing cards, board games, studying, or even business meetings happen in my place. It brought life to the area where I'm at. And I'd like to emphasize on that all hookah bar owners went through a lot of trouble to get their licenses, and we are all compliant with the law at this point. We try as much as we can to do so by not allowing anyone under 18 to be in there, not allow any alcohol inside the premises, and I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Laura Yassin, and I'm the co-owner of both locations of Al Nara Hookah Lounge in both Eugene and in Gresham with my brother, Shadi Yassin. I kind of want to give you a brief description of my life in 2 minutes. I have been in the bank industry for about 7 years. I also tried the mortgage industry, which you all know have crashed. I also tried the stock market industry, crashed as well. That all put me on unemployment.
You gotta stop doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone who went to college and spent lots and lots of thousands of dollars to go to college and obtain an education to offer me a secure career, you know, I figured out that being on unemployment is something I didn't want to be on. And there was all these extensions offered over and over, which were appealing to be on unemployment. However, I decided with my younger brother to open a hookah lounge and offer a place for people to come in, offer job employment in one location. I have over 8 employees. They're all on payroll. They all pay taxes. They all pay Medicare. They all pay, I have one of them that pays child support. He's never paid child support in his life. I've got a couple of employees who are students at colleges full-time. You know, so like he said, this is a domino effect. It's going to put all my employees, which I'm not sure if you guys know, but there's about 60 employees throughout all the hookah lounges in Oregon by itself, not including, you know, like the owners or the contract employees like photographers, DJs, door guy that we bring on special events. You know, we do help the community back in our hookah lounges. We are sponsoring right now 2 kids who are in 6th grade and 5th grade to go next summer to Washington, D.C. by giving them all of our cans on a daily basis, and they've so far made about $800, you know? So that's something that they're going for a camp in for the Army. It's also, like Rami discussed, it's a cultural thing. I come from the Middle East. You know, I go to Jordan once a year. It is the Starbucks in the Middle East. You know, one thing that they touched on is cigar shops are being also for sampling, and they're being grandfathered in. However, I don't see why it's, you know, 4 people compared to 40 people for sampling. You know, that doesn't make any sense. I have a choice when I go out to bars and restaurants to not go outside with my smoker friends and smoke a cigarette. I have the choice to go inside. People who come into the hookah lounge, which I can call by name half of this room, actually. They're all my customers, and they're all here for us. You know, we provide...
We're out of time.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's about it, really. You know, like, we are providing a place for people who come, socialize, other than being in house parties, doing drugs, drinking underage. So I just want to thank you guys for your time.
Questions for this panel? I'm going to ask you one question. I think I know the answer, but just to get it on the record, when patrons come into your places, do you force them to stay there against their will?
Actually, nope. We do require 1 minimum drink, you know, and that's to cover the overhead, just how when I go to Portland City Grill, they require me to have a drink.
So when they see the smoke-filled lounge, they can leave if they want to.
18 over, they can leave, and it says on the outside, smoking is inside.
Can I mention one thing, sir?
Please. Quickly.
Very soon. 18 years old means you can vote. You are knowledge enough to know the difference between good or bad. We do not go to their house to bring them to our locations. They are free to come and free to leave. But since the place is open, we have regulation like everybody else.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The next panel will be Maher Makbul. Okay. Basum Abu Kintel.
Father.
Okay. I'm going to use initials. I might be better at that.
Bella Yaha.
Okay. I sincerely apologize for murdering your names, but...
You can call me Mike if you like.
Okay. Would you again please state your name when you start? You have 2 minutes. I'm going to give you a sign 2 minutes, we've got to stop, okay? So say your most important points first.
All right. Okay. Co-chairs please. And members of the committee, my name is Mayor Mark Bull. I own Sultan Hookah Lounge in Portland in the St. John's neighborhood. I just want to tell you how I started this business. Basically, I have a cafe, Sultan Cafe, in Northwest Portland. When the law passed, I couldn't have hookah smoking anymore because my building was attached. I took a risk, and I opened another lounge because it had to be a freestanding building because of the regulations that DHS has set and the law says I have to do. I followed 1, 2, 3, and I got 1, 2, 3. I did everything they asked me. I went above and beyond, okay? They put us, excuse my language, through hell to get this license, to get the certification. They make you wait 90 days, okay, to make sure that you sell 75% minimum tobacco products. Well, if all I sell is tobacco, doesn't that make sense that it's 100% tobacco? I don't need to show you that. Okay. On top of that, freestanding alone business. 25%, basically, you can't sell food. You can't sell any major stuff. Okay. If you miss one thing on the application, okay, they take 30 days to tell you this is what you need. Okay. They go through. They try to delay you as much as possible. Okay. This is very systematic. You can ask every single one in this room. They put us through hell. Okay. And we still did it. We still paid the fines. We hired lawyers. They tried to put us out of business, basically. And now you don't like what we did. You call it a loophole. It's not a loophole. This is what you put in the bill. This is what you put in the law. And we're just following it. I card every single person that comes in my business. I don't have one violation of having a minor in my business. I put over $80,000, every single penny I got. Okay, if I lose this, I'm done. I got a wife. I got kids. It's over for me. You guys have to take account. We have leases. We have contracts. Who's going to pay these bills? The state of Oregon? Can you afford that? There you go. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Please. Mr. Co-Chair and Co-Committee members, my name is Bassam Abu Qadr.
Said that better than I did.
Yeah. I'm here. I'm the owner of Mirage Hookah Lounge, Eugene, Oregon. And I'm here to testify in opposition of Bill 2726. I'm going to tell you very quick my background. I'm originally from a country that's been in war forever, which I never made it there, from Palestine. I grew up in Egypt. I moved here for education. I have a bachelor and a master degree in engineering and technology management from Portland State University with an honor from a government organization that honored President Clinton. Yet, I smoked hookah while going for college. About 2009, I lost my job. I support my family back home, and unemployment would not help me. So I decided to accept a lower-pay job in Corvallis, working as a contractor for HP, while paying my mortgage in Beaverton, Oregon, at the same time living in a Motel 6. Then I decided to take my money out of the stock market and my 401k, and open a business, investment on the side. I thought of a hookah lounge as one way to bring the culture that I learned about in Egypt. And I experienced myself. I went to Eugene. I found a place that's been shut down for 10 years, owned by an ex-general army, that he understood what a hookah is because he served in the Middle East. I took the place. I went to the city of Eugene. They refused to talk to me. So I had to hire an architect, pay $200 per hour, so she can draft a change of use model for the city of Eugene. And they give me 5 pages of requirement. Not even in, this is not DHS, this is the city of Eugene. I invested $50,000 to remodel the entire place that I do not even own. Then I went to the DHS and I asked him for a certification. I was harassed. I was told my only violation is I'm not open, and we denied your license. Why am I paying rent if I'm not open? I hired 2 lawyers that charged me $500 per hour.
Wind it up.
Okay, $200 and to fight with the state. Then the state decided to settle the case with me. After an 11-month fighting, they settled the case with 0 fine. And they just gave me the license. I haven't even made a dollar yet. And today I'm here. Yeah. To tell you that, because if they shut me down, I lost everything. I lost my education because now I have no job. I have nothing if
Thank
I
you.
Lose this. Thanks.
Thank you. Sure. Co-chair member of the committee, my name is Bilal Yahya. I'm a hookah lounge in downtown Memphis, Portland.
Actually, I have a business prior to that. A couple of years back, I'm in gas station business. Everybody hates me, obviously. And I shut down the business. I couldn't make it back then. The rent went up. The price gas went up. I don't have enough funds to get more gas loads, so I shut down the first gas station. Next year, the second gas station, the third, the fourth. Basically, I'm out of business for quite some time until I find employment. Then I said, I'm not that kind of person. I'm a hustler guy. I work so hard. I want to earn my money. I don't want any support from anybody. So I end up opening that business, and which is part of our culture. And this is, we have to have it. I mean, hookah is a must for us. We cannot. We have to see it. So I got in that business for 2 years now, and that place I took over in Northwest downtown was a really filthy place, all graffiti and ugly, and I cleaned it up. All the neighbors love me for this. They thank me so much about that business, and they hang out. And basically, I heard the community is so much in that location, Northwest downtown. I don't know how much you're familiar with that location in that area. A lot of homelessness, all that. So I cleaned up pretty much, and in my type of business, I card every single person walk into the business, wouldn't smoke. He's welcome to come in. He's welcome not to come in. It's up to him. But as far as legally wise, I do card every single person, and that's fair. I think it's not fair for the state to shut down 10 or 15 hookah lounges just to satisfy or whatever. I think this is not fair. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
Mr. Koshman, can I just add one thing, please?
Quickly.
Okay. Just one thing. The same interns that you heard from earlier, these people came into our businesses without our knowledge. They took pictures. Other people came in. They took smoke samples without our permission, without us letting us know. They never identified themselves. Last time I checked, we're still in America, guys. Mm-hmm. This is not right. Okay? Please, please take an effect what we just did here today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you much.
All right.
Very quickly.
The reason the state epidemiologist asked for a registry member in the bill, where basically she asked they can come and inspect at any time, the reason they harass us is to enter into a stipulated agreement with us when we settle the case so that they come and inspect us at any time. So that's why they are harassing us, and now they ask for this to be a law.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Our next panel will be Dr. Eric Bernstein, Dr. John Handy, and Shaika Taxman, Tomin. Did I get that anywhere near right?
Do we have a third?
I don't know where the third. You got mine right.
Sure,
I don't know about anybody else.
Okay.
I think there's only two.
John, go.
Okay.
So my name is John Handy. I'm a thoracic surgeon. I'm the director of the chest cancer and the chest surgery programs for Providence Health Systems. And today I'm actually representing the American Lung Association. I'm honored to be on the Leadership Council for the State of Oregon, which is a volunteer leadership organization. And actually I've asked my colleagues to put into y'all's record a letter from our president. And I just want to make a couple of points briefly. The hookah tobacco is addictive, contains nicotine, causes lung cancer, heart disease, other complications, just like cigarettes. There's some additional things that are not part of cigarettes, like the charcoal in the pipe, as well as the flavorings that we don't know the healthcare consequences of, that sort of thing. Because you can inhale so much more smoke from the cool tobacco of hookah versus cigarettes, it actually, the user uses much more tobacco. As a matter of fact, I was kind of shocked to find out that the World Health Organization has shown, as Representative Tomei mentioned, is that 1 hour of typical, I will stress the word typical, hookah smoking is the equivalent of 100 cigarettes. That's 5 packs of cigarettes, and I've been doing this long enough to be gray and bald trying to cure lung cancer. I've met people that have been able to smoke 5 packs of cigarettes in a day, but it usually takes single-minded dedication. So to be able to be young and do this in 1 hour is really terrible, in my opinion. Also, to reiterate Representative Tomei's point, so it doesn't get buried, is that tobacco is the number one preventable cause of death and disease. And so in a society that's trying to decrease the cost of health care, does it make sense for us to allow proliferation of smoking lounges, especially ones targeting youth? Thank you.
My name is Eric Bernstein. I'm a medical oncologist. I have a medical degree as well as a master's in public health. And the reason I'm coming to speak to you today is because I have mixed feelings about some of the things I do as a physician in light of public health. And I think that all of you can probably make more of an impact than I can. So I had approximately 100 patients die in 2009 from smoking-related illnesses. Tobacco is the number one preventable cause of death in America, and I brought a couple diagrams for you that will be relevant. If you look at the first chart with the colored lines, you see different types of cancer over time and their rates per 100,000 in the population. We've spent billions and billions of dollars on the war on cancer, and the biggest success story is stomach cancer, and that's secondary to the advent of refrigeration. The biggest loser is tobacco has caused this increase in lung and bronchus cancer. As you can see, that's gone steadily up and is now trending down due to the decrease in tobacco consumption, which is shown on the next graph. Here you can see on the black line, which is unfortunately unlabeled due to a printing problem, the decrease in tobacco consumption in America, followed by the gray line, which is the decrease in death from lung cancer in men, and the blue line, which is the stable rate of lung cancer in women, because that has yet to fall as they've not been as quick to quit smoking. The last diagram is various legislation and changes in tobacco advertising over time and how that has influenced the consumption of cigarettes. Right. This is where we're winning the war on cancer, is by decreasing the amount people smoke. And any business that targets young people and allows them and introduces them to tobacco in the same way that tobacco was marketed to young children, you know, by handing things out around high schools and flavoring cigarettes and cigars to appeal to children, to me, is unconscionable. So, you know, this morning my day began at 6 a.m. in the hospital taking care of a 46-year-old woman who is dying of cancer. I would rather see fewer and fewer of these people in the future, and this is the way to prevent it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Thompson, members of the committee. My name is Chuck Tauman. It's T-A-U-M-A-N. I'm a lawyer in Portland, but I'm here as the president of the Tobacco-Free Coalition of Oregon. The Tobacco-Free Coalition of Oregon is the statewide anti-tobacco advocacy organization and includes membership of the major health advocacy organizations in the state and nationally, the American Lung Association, the American Cancer Society, the American Heart Association, Northwest Health Foundation, Upstream Public Health. I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 2726, and I would like to comment. My written presentation is quite detailed and gives a history. I don't want to go over that. I don't want to take your time for that. I'd like to comment on a couple of things that have occurred here today. In particular, the last two pages of my written testimony are reproductions of the websites and social media photos that are put on by the hookah lounges. And I show this to you to rebut the implication that there is a cultural or historical aspect of this. With all due respect to the hookah owners, nine of whom we've heard from today, these are marketed as a place to have a party. These are marketed to children. They specialize in children. You can go to the websites of these organizations and you can see what their intent is. There was a question about business versus culture. You heard from nine business people, people who have an interest, an economic interest in these hookah lounges. What I'm telling you is that you're here as representatives of the people and have the public interest in mind. And the public interest is to maintain the faith with your colleagues who passed this law in 2007, who eliminated smoking in lounges like this. Now, through some unfortunate drafting, there was a loophole. And this loophole has been exploited. The fact is that hookah smoking indoors has been banned in Turkey and Syria and other Middle Eastern countries. They are more protective of the health of the hookah smokers in those countries than we are here in Oregon. And finally, the scariest thing that I heard today, that was repeated several times. hookah smoking is the Starbucks of the Middle East. Well, let me tell you something. If this bill is not passed, we are going to see a hookah bar where Starbucks are. And we're going to see that instead of coffee and a social place, we're going to see a place where young people, underage people, are encouraged to come and smoke. And the motivation for this is not history. It's not religion. It's not culture. It's the dollar. So you have a choice. Public health versus profit. This has been the classic juxtaposition of big tobacco in this country. Public health on the one hand, earning a dollar, earning a buck on the other. And the choice is up to you. 2726 puts that choice in your pocket, and we anticipate a successful result here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions?
Yeah. Hey, how come you guys weren't here to back my bill to put cigarettes in the
description? You weren't asked to testify, but I would.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr.
Absolutely.
Anyone else for this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next panel will be Chris Smith, Courtney Clark, and Adam Walsh.
Thank you.
Please identify yourself before you begin and yes. Proceed.
Hi, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Courtney Clark. I am actually 32 years old. I'm here because I'm actually a patron of these businesses, not all the time. I've never, in my entire time of being at any of these establishments, have I ever been made to purchase smoking products, smoke hookah. These are things that I think that the bottom line here is for me, measure 2726, the fact that this bill actually makes it so that we can't rule thyself. I mean, when you're of age, you're of the age of 18 years old, you are an adult. I actually heard Representative Tomei earlier use the word kids, and I've heard several times the word children being used, which is really egregious. I mean, the fact that somebody of the age of 18 is actually a legal adult and gets to make those choices on their own is actually the part that I find, you know, really intolerant. And, you know, the bottom line is, yeah, this is a cultural thing, but it may be a place for 18-year-olds and over to go and hang out and socialize, and maybe they do it differently than a 32-year-old or somebody older than that. But that doesn't mean that it's being marketed to underage children, and I think that's the bottom line. It says there right on the door, you must be of age. And the bottom line is, if anybody is able to make a decision in the Army or vote, we can't sit here and say that they don't have the right to do those things because they can't make decisions for themselves, because otherwise we would actually not allow them to vote until 21 or until they felt it was okay. And this is just another example of people making decisions for other people, and I think that's what it comes down to, is we should be able to rule thyself and make decisions on our own.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Christopher Smith. I'm a 28-year-old business administration student, and I actively attend most of the hookah lounges in town. I'd like to address several of the things that have been brought up today. They talk about the theme parties that are currently held at several of these things. If you know anything about the college community, these exact same parties are held at every frat house and sorority there is around town, and most people's birthday parties in any age range. It's just something that people do for fun. It's not that we actively, you know, are targeting saying, oh, you must come for this. It's something that's found inside or outside of hookah lounges or even any nightclub in downtown. There's monthly parties that have themes for whatever reason they choose to have, and that's the 18 and up clubs, 16 and up clubs, 21 and over. Another issue that I find is that we're ignoring the cigar bar aspect of this. I often visit them, and I've never made a retail purchasing decision from there. I go there, I buy my cigar, I smoke it there, and I leave. If I'm going to buy one for retail, I'm going to go to an actual cigar retail establishment because they're often much cheaper. Indoor air quality, I believe that there should be some changes made. requiring certain levels of filtration, but that's an issue that's not addressed in here, and that should be addressed separately. And I just don't believe it's right to take away the freedom of choice for people that are 18 and up. It's implied consent when you go into these establishments. You know that you're going into an establishment for these purposes. You're going to be around smoke, or you're going to be smoking. I actually voted for the Clean Air Act when it went into being law, because I am, you know, of age and I enjoy going out to bars, but I do not want to be around the smoke if that's not what I'm actively pursuing for the day. So I am in opposition of Bill 2726 because I think it takes away my right to do what I've been given.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Thompson, members of the committee, Adam Walsh with the City of Eugene. I just want to share that the City of Eugene has had an indoor clean air ordinance since the year 2000, and feel that the changes embodied in this bill support the intent of local code and would ask for your support.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you. And we have Riley Grannon and Donald Walters. Please state your name and proceed.
Good afternoon. I'm Riley Grannon. I'm currently resident in Eugene and Lane County. I'm also managing director of the Eugene Ballet Company and the Eugene Ballet Academy. We presently have a building we renovated and purchased in 2007, the Midtown Arts Center on the main street in Eugene. And what we do promote there is, of course, the love of dance, discipline, and a healthy lifestyle. Recently, next to us, 60 feet away, has opened a hookah lounge, which has developed their business there, and which I believe is antithetical to absolutely what we do, in that we're concerned about the health of our young people. I have several hundred young dancers that come in, that walk by that establishment, and it has a certain allure. But that allure is, in other places, has been discontinued by the city because they've developed a smoking ban in public buildings, bars, and restaurants. Yet, secondhand smoke exists in a hookah lounge directly, it would appear, to fly in the face of ordinance in Eugene, but this loophole permits it. I know people who've suffered the ravages of lung cancer and do not encourage young people to get involved in tobacco consumption. No matter how shiny and attractive they are, it's the prime purpose to be a tobacco delivery system with a hookah. And I encourage it to be banned in public areas. Our neighborhood, Midtown Arts Center and Midtown area, deserves better. Please enact legislation that eliminates operations that encourage smoking for youth. Thank you.
Thank you. You're up. Co-chair Greenlick and co-chair Thompson and the rest of the representatives. I'm here to speak on behalf of cigar stores. Generally, their
name.
Could you state your name, please?
Oh, I'm sorry, Donald Walters.
Okay.
Apologize. I'm here for advocating cigar stores. They're generally populated by mature people, and in my belief, should not be included in House Bill 2726. There is a health benefit for those cigar stores, for myself and other smokers to go to them. They're highly ventilated with high-volume air movement systems. And while smoking the cigars at the cigar stores, we're spreading secondhand smoke to our spouses and children at home. And due to the cigar stores, smoking stores, we're not standing in public spreading secondhand smoke. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
Is the status of cigar stores changed at all in this bill?
Yes, there's cigar stores and House bills. Cigar stores will be eliminated from having sit-down smoke areas.
I thought they were exempted.
They're excluded. I'm sorry, I just shut my computer down.
Yeah, they're
specifically excluded
from the bill.
Pardon?
They are specifically excluded in the bill.
I think that's cigar lounges which serve alcohol. Cigar stores are just strictly cigars, and nobody can be in there unless they smoke at the same time.
Well, we'll figure that out and take it into consideration.
Okay, thank you very
Whichever it is.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes our hearing on House Bill 2726. I will close that hearing.
Wait a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, you called his name.
I will briefly reopen the hearing on 2726, and that you can have
2 minutes.
2 minutes. I apologize for the oversight. I will allow it 2 minutes.
60 seconds.
Okay, whatever. But please state your name and for the record and proceed, please.
My name is Skipper Osborne. Good afternoon, co-chairs Greenlick and Thompson and members of the committee. My name is Skipper Osborne. I'm former president of the NAACP Portland, and I'm founder and CEO of Truth and Justice for All, the civil rights organization. I live in District 43. On behalf of Broadway Cigar Portland and Lake Oswego, Oregon, I am here to testify against provisions of House Bill 2726, which is to modify the definition of smoke shop for purposes of Oregon Indoor Clean Air Act and directs Oregon Health Authority to establish registration systems for smoke shops. I have very serious concerns with Section 1, and I think this will clear up what you all just spoke about. But Section 1, Paragraph 5, Subparagraph G and H of House Bill 2726 as they relate to smoke shops. Subparagraph G reads, has a maximum seating of 4 persons, and Subparagraph H reads, allows smoking only for the purpose of sampling tobacco products for making retail purchase decisions. I ask that Section 1, subparagraphs G and H, be written the same for smoke shops as they are written for cigar bars in Section 1, subparagraph C, which reads, allow the smoking of cigars on the premises but prohibits the smoking of other tobacco products, etc. And subparagraph G, which reads, has a maximum capacity of 40 persons. If House Bill 2726 passes as written, it will discriminate against people of color and women because we are a good make of the clientele which meted Broadway Cigar for a good fine smoke. My understanding of Section 1, Paragraph 5, subparagraphs G and H, as it is written, will put Broadway Cigar out of business and also Cascade Cigar out of business, and any other smoke shop that has a seating capacity of 5 or more. The legislature should not be putting reputable businesses out of business, but only to regulate them where regulatory policy is necessary. Why are cigar, and I feel this is a very important question, why are cigar bars given more seating capacity and the right to smoke on their premises, and the same fundamental rights are not given to smoke shops? I ask that HB 2726 be tabled for further investigation, or I ask again that Section 1 and the different paragraphs be given to cigar shops. I'm extending an invitation to all of you to be my guests at Broadway Cigar to see for yourselves what a fine and classy establishment it is. Oh, and I'm also the president of Broadway Cigar Club. And I would like to say, in reference to when they say sampling cigars, some of these cigars cost me $25, and I'm not going to go and just take a little sample, and I don't think anyone in their right mind is going to tell me, and say, oh, take a little puff and see if you like it. So I encourage you all to come, and I strongly ask that you table this bill, and it really needs to be looked at, because a lot of people are going to be put out of business.
Your time is up, sir.
I'm through. Any questions?
You made your point extremely well.
Thank you.
I apologize for the oversight. Somehow you got lost on the list.
No problem. And I would like to say, like to see you again, Commissioner Kinnemer. I was chairman of Clackamas County Diversity Leadership Council when you were commissioner, and Representative Cannon. I worked for State Representative Chip Shields for the 2007 and 2009 legislative session.
Thank you.
I'd like to say, Mr. Chair, that when I smoked many, many years ago, I did smoke cigars, but they were 3 for 50 cents.
Oh.
Those are the expensive ones.
Well, they still are if you go to the right place.
Yeah, right. $200.
Okay. Please proceed.
Co-chairs
Members of the committee, my name is Mona Bolsey. I am a 26-year-old marketing consultant. I've been going on and off now for a few years now to hookah establishments, and I just want to go ahead and address two things. One, the fact that there's been a lot of mention to having it be an unsafe place for young adults, and to be realistic, young adults are exposed to too many things, drugs, alcohol-related environments that are really at homes and other places that, you know, are really unsupervised. And with the hookah lounges being a supervised location, it kind of creates a safety zone. I don't want to go across the forum saying it's a safety haven, but for the most part, it really enables some sort of establishment to where people can come in, young adults can come in, and be watched, have some sort of, common ground with various people. My second point is the Clean Air Act that was established in 2007. Employers and employees, business owners, you have to be a smoker. I mean, it's not an obligation, but essentially, you have to. If I'm going to prepare you guys a hookah, I'm going to go ahead and I have to be able to know. I have to understand the flavors. I have to be able to prepare it. I have to be able to test it and make sure that it's going to be ready for you to go. Just like any kind of, if you're a wine connoisseur, if you are a chef, you want to be able to taste your food before you're able to present it to your customers. I mean, it's the same kind of concept. So I just want to go ahead and just make that a point to you guys, and I really thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. And with that, we are going to close the hearing again on 2726. And because of the late hour, we're going to carry over to Monday the 28th, House Bill 3018 and the work session on House Bill 2967. And with that, if there is no further input from the panel, we are adjourning the House Healthcare Committee.